When the tape ended, you were talking about the cuts in athletics because of the economic downturn.
Cuts in academics.
Or academics.
Yeah. The question facing the university was whether to look at things across the board or whether to be selective and do things programmatically. Mm-hmm. And some of the faculty, particularly those who were interested in trying to unionize the faculty, wanted the resources spread across the board without programmatic variation, you know, emphasizing quality or whatever the basis might have been. And the board struggled with that. We had some board members who were very closely associated with some of the faculty who wanted the across-the-board approach. And the provost and I were both strongly supportive to the board of programmatic approaches. And that was a major issue. And the board ultimately resolved it in favor of a programmatic approach. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a major factor in preserving and strengthening quality in the academic programs of the university.
Who would you say orchestrated that the programmatic cuts?
Well, Lee Winder and I worked very closely together on most things. He was my chief academic officer and a very effective one. So it was his direct operating responsibility. But the question of what policy the board would have before it as a recommendation was something that he and I worked on, and we worked on that with several members of the board, including John Brough, who was chairperson of the board most of the early years that I was president here.
At that time, the board elected their own chair rather than had a rotation
yes.
system. If we can go back to athletics a little bit.
Sure.
Is there anything else about football that occurred during your administration that those were not generally winning years in terms?
No, Muddy Waters didn't have a very good winning. He didn't have a winning record, and he didn't have a lot of support in the community. I was satisfied with the way Doug Weaver approached it. He caught some flack for it, and I guess when your athletic director and your football coach are catching flack for something, the president's going to get his or her share of it. So in that sense, I was involved. As with almost any institution, there are certain elements of the alumni and the fan support base who think that they ought to have a lot of say, or maybe the say, in most or all of the major athletic decisions. And that simply didn't seem to me to be an appropriate role for them. And so those differences of opinion sometimes led to clashes. Early on, I got the message from some of our alums and supporters that they really expected to have a major say in picking the football coach. And it turned out when Doug chose Muddy Waters, they didn't have a say. Mm-hmm. And they weren't happy about it. It turned out the next time that Doug was favorable recommending a candidate that they were happy with. So whether they thought they had made the choice, or they thought they had influenced Doug, or whether Doug thought he had made it without their involvement, I couldn't really say, but there wasn't an issue because there was a more common agreement.
How about in basketball? Those were some of the good years.
I got here in August after Magic Johnson had left at the end of his sophomore year, but Judd Heathcote was well established, well entrenched, a fine coach. A good friend. He and I think, I would say, are still good friends. We had a good relationship the whole time we were here. Mm-hmm. Went through a few issues together when there were things from outside, but we were always of a common mind, I think, on all those issues. some things that involved behavior of some players, and the public wanted something to happen, and Judd wasn't so sure that it should, and told him that, you know, those were his decisions, not to be influenced by the outside reactions to what was going on. Hockey was the same. Ron Mason was an outstanding coach, I guess maybe the outstanding college coach of all times. And but I got along with all of them well. I saw them around the athletic facilities. I was there as a runner using the facilities. I was around. I used to, one of the perquisites I had of office was a key to the weight room in the football building when it was there. And I used to see some of the players and some of the coaches at odd hours. And that, you know, just little things like that make a working relationship a little easier, I guess.
Interesting. You talked about the alumni, and obviously the issue of the Alumni Association came up as an important issue during your administration. How'd that come about?
Well, the board had made some decisions at, in the months just before I came here in response to recommendations that came from to them. And the board, I think, later concluded that it hadn't really understood the full implications of what it had done. The Alumni Association was seeking independence with subsidization and also the right to act in the university's name in ways that the board concluded later, and I concluded almost immediately, were not in the best interest of the university. The Alumni Association wanted to take over fundraising and raise money into a private alumni association so that they would be able to allocate funds from it. They wanted to establish a lobbying network so that they would in effect be able to manage the legislative effort on behalf of the university. And they were interested through some various approaches to athletic fundraising in extending their influence in academic decision making. Much of that arose from some conclusions that people who were very interested in the university but were outside it came to in the years, just several years before I got here. They disagreed with the board. They viewed the board as much too liberal, not having the stature that they thought it should have. And they were looking for ways to counteract what they thought were bad decisions that the board made. And one of the ways was to create this independent entity and set of different approaches to decision making, in effect to counter the influence they saw the board having. They were very upset about things like the policy on South Africa and investments in South Africa, about the boycott of grapes, about any number of things like that. And so there was a good bit of anti-board hostility, and the folks who felt that way thought that if they could establish alternative avenues for decision making, they could minimize what they viewed as an unfortunate impact of the board on the university. They didn't want to run for membership. They just wanted to be able to stop the board from doing some of the things, making some of the kinds of decisions it was making, or make some positive decisions, do some things on their own that the board might not do or might not approve of. And once the board really looked into what was going on and saw what that meant to the board's constitutional responsibilities for the university, said, this doesn't make any sense at all. And the board reversed itself. And the people who were involved through the Alumni Association and directly and indirectly through that fought rather bitterly to try to get the independence they had wanted, and they lost. they did a lot of damage to the university, but the strength, the success of the alumni program we have now is a pretty good testimony, I think, to the fact that the course that was set, and I was at the center of that. The board was very supportive once they took the time to look at all the implications. I think everybody would conclude now that that was what was needed. And if you look around the country, you see occasionally that another university is confronted with this kind of an issue, and virtually all of them have to resolve it as we did. Not all the details exactly, but in that direction, to preserve the interest of the institution.
Mm-hmm. Sounded like a tough decision.
Oh.
One that had to be made.
It was bitter. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was happening with the alumni publications, and not just the alumni official publications, but other things we were doing, were bitter attacks on me, on the chairman of the board, on other people who were trying to act in what they thought of was the interest of the university. I mean, really vicious. Mm-hmm. And all over the country going to the alumni.
Yeah. Jack Shingleton was involved in that, in terms of being brought in. What was your relationship with him? I know he was a placement, but...
Yeah, I asked Jack to come in and take charge of the alumni affairs office. We had to go through a process which was a legal separation of the Alumni Association and tell them that they had no right to use the name of the university. And that was because they fought so bitterly to try to be independent. So we had to create a university alumni association. I asked Jack to come in and head that. He had done other things. He had been acting athletic director at one time. And he did tremendous service to the university, helped make peace. He was well known to many of the alumni, and he was able to help calm some of them down. Not all of them, by any means, but just it was very effective at it, and really helped launch the current modern alumni association of MSU.
Mm-hmm. That early, the director, do you remember who the director was, of the new one that was brought in?
Chuck Webb.
Oh, Chuck Webb, okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to be a quiz.
No. I have trouble remembering some of the people in some of the slots.
Yeah, we're talking 120 years sometimes.
Yeah.
What was your position as an economist? Obviously, you had knowledge in the area of the divestiture of investments in South Africa. How did that first come about? Obviously,
The board had gotten into that before I got here. I was supportive of the policy. As a matter of philosophy, I was in favor of that generally.
Michigan State was the first large university to take that position?
That's my understanding, uh-huh. Yes.
Uh-huh. And so you were supportive of it?
Yeah.
Some of the other things that were going on campus, the buildings that occurred, and some were initiated and some were completed.
The two that stand out most in my mind are the Wharton Center and the Breslin Center. The Wharton Center was really the first project I was involved in. When I got here, I had to make some decisions and some recommendations to the board because a private fundraising effort had failed. It wasn't going to happen. And Roger Wilkinson and Steve Terry and put together a plan where we could undertake the financing of it internally. So in effect, what we did was we had bids coming in. We didn't have the financial ability to accept the bids on the basis of the private fundraising campaign. So we talked about it and said, if we don't do this, we don't find a way to do this now, the costs are going to escalate and we'll probably never be able to have a facility like this. But we had only, I think, maybe $10.5 million committed, and some of that was shaky for a $21 million project. And so they looked at a way to come up with a proposal to bond against student fees. And we explained that to the board I guess you'd say privately, and then said, we can do this. It's very different from what we've done. In effect, we'll just declare the project a success and accept the bids. And that was at the first board meeting after I'd become president, I believe. And the board, a couple of the board members really understood what was happening. Some of the others were not quite as sure of the details, and some of them, a couple of them, had very little understanding, but everybody wanted it to go. And so it was sort of an understanding that if this was a proposal that the administration could advance and support, the board would approve it and not ask very many questions, and everybody would be about as happy as they could be with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got the Wharton Center built, and you know, that was a good thing. We ultimately had to give $1 million back to one of the donors over an issue that was unfortunate, but we got it built. And the Breslin Center, there had been proposals and projects around for years whether we could have a Coliseum or not. And after I told the board I was going to be leaving the office, I had some time, I thought about it and said, you know, I really don't want somebody to look around some years from now and say, we don't have a Coliseum. Why not? Who failed? And so I asked Ken Thompson, Roger Wilkinson, and Steve Terry to take a look at the project and see how we could finance something and put together something and that we could take to the board and say, if you want it, here's a way you can do it. And so they worked up a proposal. We met with the board, laid it out on just those terms. We said, here are the issues. Here's the way it can be financed. We can have it. That was a time when the board was pretty leery of committing to things like that. But we talked about the implications, the fact that if it didn't happen then, it would be much more expensive, much harder to get approved. And I think they came around pretty much unanimously to deciding that they wanted to do it. And so they approved that just about the last board meeting when I was president. So those were sort of the bookends from a physical facility standpoint. A lot of interesting on opposite sides of the campus, one primarily cultural events, the other primarily athletic and student events. But the two of them together always seemed to me just changed the nature of the university, what it made possible in terms of the activities that were here, what it brought to the campus, what it offered our faculty and students. You know, great universities have the capacity to do big, important things like that in those areas. Mm-hmm. And so I was pleased with that. We got the cyclotron building, we got the plant and soil science building, and there were other things that were important. The $30 million, I think it was, for the cyclotron was, we were very lucky. When I'd been in Florida, I'd known the man who was chair of the committee in Congress that dealt with priorities for the allocation of funds like that, and he was very helpful to us in getting it. So an old association helped.
So the Washington connection helped there.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about during your tenure as president, your knowledge of the government affairs, grants, and that sort of thing? Did you put any emphasis on that? Did you feel that helped you? Government had changed, but
yeah. John Cantlin ran the operation for research and grants and things like that, and I helped out occasionally, but that wasn't an area where there was a lot of need for my direct involvement. We were very successful. We had a long history of doing things well there, and so it just didn't seem to require a lot of my personal involvement. Sometimes, you know, I would go to Washington occasionally to deal with particular individuals or particular issues or things like that, but that It wasn't an area of great need for the president's involvement.
Yeah. Any major curricular changes that occurred during your administration that year?
Well, I was a strong advocate of the semester system as opposed to the quarter system. It didn't come about until a relatively short time after I left office, but I'd started, I started agitating for it, urging the faculty through the Faculty Senate to consider it and having the analysis done for it. And David Scott, I think, was the one who pushed it through and got it done, but that was, it seemed to me that it was just a much better arrangement for producing academic quality, for giving a little more time to work through assignments for the students to get to know the subject matter. And we debated that a lot and looked at it. But the curriculum by delegation at Michigan State is basically a faculty matter. Mm-hmm. So the president and you might even say to a fair extent the provost have limited influence in those areas. Not without impact sometimes, but that's basically a faculty matter. But I guess the main influence on the curriculum was in the programmatic changes through budgetary decisions and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. But
was there any year in terms of the budget crisis that was particularly bad or difficult?
Well, 81, 82 were the really tough years. One of the years where we actually had three reductions in the budget. You know, normally you think of it as a serious cut when you don't get the same percentage increase you had last year, but we were having actual reductions below the prior year dollar level. Mm-hmm. And we were having those percentage increases taken out of our budget well into the year, so that a 3% cut on your total budget, which comes halfway through the year, is in effect a 6% increase. And so, yeah, the 81-82, when the unemployment was high, the graduates were having trouble getting jobs, the cutbacks, the reductions in the budget, those were really devastating years.
How would you say your relationship was with the governors that you dealt with?
That was
Milliken, and
that was one of the real delights of my time here. Mm-hmm. I was good personal friends with both Bill Milliken and Jim Blanchard. Both of them were strong, outspoken supporters of me and what I was doing. In controversial times when there were issues, both of them were willing to speak out and say that they didn't get involved in the issues. They spoke out approving of the way we were going about things and being supportive of me. And so both the Republican Governor Milliken and the Democratic Governor Blanchard were good friends. Blanchard was the first MSU graduate to become governor. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of fun with that. Mm-hmm. I introduced him at the first event at which he spoke as governor, and somebody in the public information office found an old picture of him when he had been a student here and he ran for student government. He was up in a tree, and we got that framed, and maybe he had a picture of the governor in the tree. But that was sort of typical of a very enjoyable, mm-hmm. Very productive relationship. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that both men had, while they were in office, had maybe a good assessment of what this university was about?
Yes, they both understood it. Both of them very bright. Both of them interested in higher education. Neither of them had an approach which you'd say caused them to be highly favorable to one institution over another. Mm-hmm. The fact that Blanchard was an MSU graduate didn't mean that you got the sort of pork barrel activity that you sometimes see in the federal Congress or something. But he was very supportive of Michigan State in general and very helpful in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Were there any issues that came up, or were you based, I'm not saying used that relationship, but where that came became an issue, a help or something?
Well, just the fact that we had good relations in both instances was a help, neither of them was the kind that would make that an issue, use it as leverage, and I never did either. I never had to, but they were always supportive.
Okay. How about the endowment and the general lack of endowment that this university had? Did that surprise you when you first came here?
Now, surprise is probably a mild word. I was shocked. I had been involved in raising the money for the first endowed chair at each of the other two institutions where I'd been president. Neither of them had a single endowed chair. Because of its age and reputation and all, I never thought to ask about that at Michigan State.
Before you got here?
Before I got here. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake of going on assumptions, and they were wrong. Apparently, fundraising had never been a problem, a priority here, and consequently, we were far, far behind where this institution should have been. For example, in fundraising for the President's Council, President's Club, we had had an arrangement that allowed people to join the President's Club with a commitment of insurance. And the way it worked, it was a great benefit for the insurance salesman, but of limited benefit for the university, because you could get to be a member of the President's Club by taking out a policy with a certain value, and if you looked at the life expectancy and the assumed rate of inflation, by the time that policy paid off, it would probably have cost more to maintain those people as members of the club than would be the value of the ultimate return to the university. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things they did when they took a look at that, said, let's cut that out, and insurance people all got mad because they had been selling a lot of insurance on that as a mechanism to get people into the President's Club.
Mm-hmm.
But there were no endowed chairs. There had been no, never been a real campaign, a capital campaign. And it started more slowly than I would have liked, but it was at least the initiation in virtually all areas of fundraising of some efforts, and they've gradually expanded into what John DiBiagio and now Peter McPherson have been able to do. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really have a development officer. We had people who, as they would say, were fundraisers who never got around to asking anybody for money. Mm-hmm. And that's not a very good way to try to raise funds.
Yeah. Yeah. The coming together of the problems with the Alumni Association and the general economic downturn.
With the alumni, the economic downturn, and the absence of any structure for fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to create the new Alumni Association. I hired Joe Dickinson as our first real development officer as vice president for development. And then eventually the economy turned around.
I was a little surprised to know that how relatively low proportion of our graduates were actually giving to endowment, but I know that's turning around.
Well, there were stories that they used to tell comparing Michigan and Michigan State, how the president of the University of Michigan would meet with the freshmen and begin by telling them what their obligations were going to be to the institution. As the first time they ever saw the president, Michigan State, it was just the opposite. It was telling them what the university was going to do for them, and never asking them for anything in return. And they responded by not giving, for the most part.
Would you talk a little bit about your staff, the people that you worked with? Provost Winder, you'd mentioned a little bit.
Yeah.
John Cantlin.
John Cantlin. Both of those men had been in the positions they were in my administration when I got here. I talked with each of them about their preferences. I knew of their reputation and work. I asked them both if they would stay, and they both said they would and would like to. And I had what I thought were terrific relationships with both of them all the way through. Roger Wilkinson was the chief financial officer, the administrative vice president. I wanted to bring a person in, Ken Thompson, to be my chief administrative and financial officer. And Ken and I talked about that, and he was prepared to offer Roger the opportunity to stay as the associate where he had been the vice president. Roger debated that and then told us that he would do that. He would like to do that and stay. And I had both Ken and I had good relationships with Roger. He was effective. He was a loyal and a productive officer. And later, when Ken left, when I was gone, Ken left, Roger then became the vice president, which I think is a real tribute to him as an individual. He also served as secretary to the board. I brought in a man named Fred Carlisle, who had been chair of the English department and was a senior faculty member of distinction, as my executive assistant. And he was a very good person to work in terms of coordinating matters of interest to the president's office with